Spirituality doesn't look like sitting down and meditating. Spirituality looks like folding the towels in a sweet way and talking kindly to the people in the family, even though you've had a long day, or even saying to them, listen, I've had such a long day, it would be really wonderful if I could just fold these. I'd really love folding these towels quietly if you all are ready to go to bed without me, or whatever it is. People often say to me, I have so many things that take up my day, I don't have time to take up a spiritual practice. And the thing about being a parent doesn't take extra time. It's enfolded into the act of parenting. You fold the towels in a sweet way. It doesn't take extra time.
This is Becoming Wise, an inquiry into the mystery and the art of living. I'm Krista Tippett. Sylvia Boorstein was one of those young Jewish seekers of the 1960s and 1970s who helped bring Buddhism to mainstream culture in the West. And she's another 21st century hybrid spiritual being. Over the years, she's reintegrated Jewish teachings and rituals in an enlivening, organic interplay with Buddhist teachings and practice.
I grew up in a post-Depression household. Both my parents had jobs. And I'm an only child. I lived with my two parents and my grandmother, who was widowed, my father's mother. And my parents went off to work, so my grandmother did a great deal of the mothering. And she was very, very solicitous, so that I remember her as bathing and washing and dressing me and making braids and preparing the kinds of foods that I like. The only thing that she was pretty not moved to respond to was the coming and going of childhood bouts of, I'm not happy. I'd say, but I'm not happy. And she'd say, and that my grandmother was not a learned woman in that sense, but it's an ethnic thing to use that Talmudic turn of phrase. And she'd say, where is it written that you're supposed to be happy all the time? And I actually think it was the beginning of my spiritual practice, that life is difficult. And then 40 years later, I learned that the Buddha said the same thing, that life is inevitably challenging, and how are we going to do it in a way that's wise and doesn't complicate it more than it is just by itself?
Sylvia, I want to ask you, to this question of raising children, human beings who are kind, who have a heart for the world, in a world that's troubled. When you and I met on a panel in Southern California 2 years ago, you told a story about leading mindfulness teaching sessions. And you told a story about, I think it was a man who at the end of it said, I'm frightened to go back out into the world. I feel so vulnerable, and in here I'm safe, but I don't know how I can be out in the world and be vulnerable. And that story came back to me as I was thinking about interviewing you on this subject, because I think as a parent, there's a version of that that goes through my mind. How much do I expose my children to? How do I teach them to be kind and open to the world's pain and vulnerable, and yet I want them to be safe, and I actually want them to be tough out in that scary world at the same time. Talk to me about that.
Well, I remember, it's a two-part answer. I remember that, I don't remember exactly that moment, but I'm sure it happened because it comes up often. And people will come and spend a week at a retreat center or a weekend or however many days, and then they do say, here, everyone is safe and it's quiet, and to go out, I feel too vulnerable. And it gives me a chance to say, really, I don't think we can become too vulnerable. I'm waiting for the time that the whole world is suddenly too vulnerable and looks around and says, wait a minute, we're making a very big mistake. We all have to stop. We have to share. We have to make sure there's enough to eat all over the world. We can teach each other our ways and tell each other our hopes and dreams, but we can't kill each other, that doesn't work. And we can't kill the earth, and we can't despoil it as we're doing. So in a sense, that's a half of an answer, Krista, because that's what I'd say to an adult who's leaving a retreat.
Right.
To a parent, I say, you know, as a child is growing up, inevitably they live in the world and they'll hear about things. If they live in a house that's a relatively peaceful, and we have a certain amount of control as parents about how much the TV is on and what's on the TV and how much they are confronted by the pain of the world. And you know what I think? Since for myself, really, I can't, sometimes with the pain of the world seems incomprehensible and unbearable to me. But I think if there's anything that balances it, it's the wonder at the world. The amazingness of people, how resilient they are, how people will take care of people that they don't know. If somebody falls or someone's in trouble or in a public place, people take care of them. Human beings have that ability. I don't think they have to learn it. They don't have to have lessons. I think we're a companionable species, and for the most part. Mm-hmm. So to be able to look at human beings and say, human beings are amazing, life is amazing. The sun came up in the exact right place this morning and celebrates seasons. Mm-hmm. I think that's a wonderful part of being part of a group of people who celebrate seasons and birthdays and holy days, so that here we are again at another time and another season. And there's that great cosmos out there to look at and imagine people up there. Going up into space and looking at the stars, and our ancestors looked at the same stars. I think that there's a way of, if I keep in myself a sense of amazement, I tell my grandchildren, look at this moon. It's a 3-day moon. It's the best moon. It's better than a 2-day moon. A 2-day moon is kind of skimpy. You really can't see it yet. And a 4-day moon, it's already like on its way to a moon, but a 3-day moon, it's just beautiful. It's my favorite moon. And if I show that to them, then they begin to think, oh, it's my favorite moon, a 3-day moon. But, you know, that just happens to be me. I like moons. Everybody will do it in their own way. But, I think that always balances it. When the Buddha taught about needing to see the suffering in the world so that we could respond with compassion, he also talked about the preciousness of life and the need to take care of it.
So this is also making me think about how we need to be attentive to what our children can teach us as well as what we want to impart to them, because some of this they know, and they actually know more immediately than we do because we lose it. I remember watching something terrible on the news the other day, and my daughter said, so many beautiful lives in the world, and this is what they focus on.
I think the beautiful and wonderful lives in the world, I certainly am not a sociologist of journalism, aren't as compelling images,
right,
as the others.
They don't make good headlines.
They don't make good headlines. Yeah. You know, it'd be wonderful. I don't know if it would be commercially viable if there were a channel that had all the wonderful things.
I don't know. It's hard to make goodness sexy. It is. I think about this a lot as a journalist.
But somebody could do that. Some entrepreneur could figure it out.
Maybe. But you know, but I think it's like kindness. It's the stuff of moments. But it can be absolutely transformative in moments. And these beautiful lives are transformative in moments. Mm-hmm. But we have to train ourselves to look for them. Right? That's what mindfulness is about in part.
There were two things that you just said. One of them is that when we are really paying attention, which is what mindfulness is, we really connect with other people. Lots of times I think for reasons of rush or whatever, even with our own children, we're not completely there. There is something about really paying attention. What seems most clear to me is that children pick up what their parents live. My friend Jim Finley, who's a Christian contemplative psychotherapist, said, I learned to pray sitting next to my mother in church. And what I understood from him is that he didn't learn the words of the prayer. He learned the feelings out of her body as she sat there. Spirituality doesn't look like sitting down and meditating. Spirituality looks like folding the towels in a sweet way. And talking kindly to the people in the family, even though you've had a long day, or even saying to them, listen, I've had such a long day, it would be really wonderful if I could just fold these. I'd really love folding these towels quietly if you all are ready to go to bed without me, or whatever it is. But I actually think that spiritual parenting. People often say to me, I have so many things that take up my day. I don't have time to take up a spiritual practice. And the thing about being a parent who might think of themselves as a wise parent or a spiritual parent doesn't take extra time. It's enfolded into the act of parenting. You fold the towels in a sweet way.
Sylvia Boorstein's books include my favorite, That's Funny, You Don't Look Buddhist. Becoming Wise is an inquiry into the mystery and art of living. Listen to more moments like this at onbeing.org/becomingwise.
On Being is supported in part by Penguin Press, publishers of the New York Times bestselling book by Krista Tippett, Becoming Wise, An Inquiry into the Mystery and Art of Living. The Washington Post says, Becoming Wise challenges all forms of dogma in science, politics, and philosophy, as well as religion, and it affirms the holiness of the body and the glory of the inquiring mind. Available now wherever books are sold.